Next case, State of Ohio versus Adrian L. Johnson. Mr. Taylor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Adrian Johnson is guilty. He was caught
Could you please speak up? Thank you.
Adrian Johnson is guilty. The officer caught him with crack cocaine and cocaine in his pocket, and Johnson admitted that he had the contraband and admitted that he intended to sell it later. This appeal involves the collateral issues of how the contraband was found and whether the contraband and resulting statement should be suppressed. I've asserted four propositions of law in my brief, and I believe there's four ways in which I can prevail in this appeal. First, this court could find that the search was based on probable cause and exigent circumstances. That's the state's third proposition of law. Second, the court could find that this was a valid search incident to arrest based on probable cause. That's the state's fourth proposition of law.
Mr. Taylor, was Mr. Johnson arrested for the marijuana possession, or was he even charged?
He was not charged with the marijuana possession, according to the evidence, but under the case law, the officer does not have to announce an arrest or actually make a formal arrest in order for the search incident to arrest doctrine to apply. And I've cited the Rawlings versus Kentucky case, Peters versus New York, and I think the concurrence in Peters is very good, and it recognizes that the police should be able to date the arrest as soon as they have probable cause and as soon as they're doing something to the defendant that's consistent with an arrest. And that's what occurred here. They searched him in a manner that was consistent with search incident to arrest. They had obviously seized him and detained him. And so we can call it an arrest, even though the officer subjectively didn't say he was under arrest until after the search.
What transpired with respect to the driver and the front seat passenger? Were they they go through their pockets as well?
The record is not clear on that. There was no evidence at the suppression hearing. There's some reference to possibly the driver being searched at the plea hearing, but it's not certain whether he was searched. Given the attitude they adopted towards Mr. Johnson, it appears that they probably would have searched the driver and searched the car as well, but it's not clear from the record.
And the defendant here is the only one who was ultimately arrested?
Correct. He was the only one who was taken into custody as far as the record shows, yes.
And what were the exigent circumstances?
Exactly. The exigent circumstances are basically State versus Moore, which is this court's case involving a traffic stop where the police officer smells marijuana and not only searches the car but searches the driver. And in that case, this court recognized that obviously drugs are readily destroyed or thrown away or eaten or swallowed, and so the exigent circumstances to prevent any more marijuana to be disposed of.
I thought there was testimony that he didn't have an odor of marijuana.
There was no affirmative testimony that he had an odor of marijuana. I think the question was only asked of the first officer, Officer Coleman, who was talking to the driver. The question was not asked of Officer Sanderson, who actually had the close one-on-one contact with Mr. Johnson. So he probably did smell like marijuana, but the evidence does not show that.
Well, counsel, was he the only passenger in the car that started to walk away from the vehicle?
Yes, and that's one of the
factors. Is that relevant?
That's one of the factors, I think, that shows probable cause, is this odd behavior of the defendant had arrived with the other two in that car, had gone to the store. Apparently, he's carrying out the purchase. The other two don't have anything in their hands. They're returning to the car. The other two occupants are about to enter the car, and they actually start to enter the car, and the defendant's about to enter. He sees the police, and he does this slow walk away from the car, doesn't say anything to anybody else. It's very odd behavior, and I think it supports the view that that he was somehow, this is a consciousness of guilt factor that supports probable cause in this case.
At least with the evidence that is in the record, there's no evidence that the driver or the other passenger had any crack cocaine on them, just the marijuana in the car, correct?
There's no evidence that the other occupants had any drugs.
So that could explain why they might not have been arrested versus this gentleman.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That could explain why they weren't arrested versus the one that actually had it on his person. Don't normally arrest.
Well, I think ultimately they did arrest him, and it was after they found the cocaine.
No, I'm just saying that might explain why the two who had only marijuana were not arrested, because they don't normally arrest just for marijuana, do they?
I don't think they normally arrest for marijuana, no.
Mr. Taylor, these cases always turn on the facts, correct? The search seizure cases. And this involved a very small portion of marijuana, a blunt, is that correct? In the console, right?
Yes.
On the console. And Mr. Johnson was sitting in the back seat, correct?
He approached the rear driver's side door as if to enter it, and then he...
That's right. They actually didn't see who was seated in the car at the time.
Correct. What happened was is that the car was empty when the police officer walked by it and smelled the marijuana and saw the marijuana blunt on the console. And so they wait for the occupants to return. Officer Coleman talks to the driver, and... the driver confirms that the defendant did, in fact, come with them. So he had come with them to the store, and now he's walking away at 1:30 in the morning, ditching his ride and engaging in this odd behavior.
Do we arrest people for ditching rides at 1:30 in the morning?
No, we don't. But there had been a marijuana offense, and obviously my arguments about search incident to arrest raises this court's line of cases regarding State versus Jones and State versus Brown.
There was no arrest of anybody with respect to the marijuana.
For purposes of search incident to arrest doctrine, we can call it an arrest, but I think you're correct that the officer did not think I'm arresting him for the marijuana based on when they were stopping him. They didn't formally arrest him until after they found the cocaine.
So they arrested him because he walked away.
Their main purpose was to search him for contraband. I think that's pretty clear from the record. And then they found the cocaine, and they arrested him for that. But under the Rawlings case—
They did a pat-down first for weapons, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a high-crime area, prevalent drugs,
and that's
weapons.
Not a problem.
Excuse me?
And it could have ended there, right? They didn't find weapons.
No, I think they were going to search for more marijuana is the reason why they, and I think Officer Sanderson said, well, there's marijuana in the car, and so I just went ahead and searched his pockets. And that was based on probable cause to search. There's two grounds that we're asserting to support the search. Probable cause plus the exigent circumstance of the evidence might be destroyed.
Counsel, in the pat-down, he didn't – is there testimony that he felt drugs in his pocket?
No, and we're not – I'm not relying on
and
Terry.
And if they're patting down for officer safety, which is the reason in these situations, and there's no weapons that are detected, and at that point he's not – you know, there's no testimony that I was in the course of patting him down for officer safety, I happened to, you know, feel a baggie full of marijuana in, you know, his pocket. There's no testimony to that, correct?
Correct. And we're not relying on.
So how do you get from there's no danger to the officer, I feel nothing in these pockets or during the pat down to warrant suspicion, and yet I'm delving into his pocket subsequent to that?
We aren't relying on the Terry doctrine to support the going into the pockets. We're relying on probable cause. When you have probable cause, you can perform a warrantless search if there's an exigent circumstance. And here we had an exigent circumstance.
What was the exigent circumstance? You had three police officers, correct?
Yes.
Okay. In Moore, there was only one police officer. And that was the one of the rationale for allowing the search, because of the thought that something was going to be destroyed. But here you had three police officers, and so there was really no danger that somebody was going to destroy evidence. Is that — wouldn't that be a fair statement?
Well, what your question assumes, Your Honor, is that they could lock him down, keep an eye on him, and keep him from destroying the evidence. And I think that's almost worse medicine than just going ahead and doing the search. But he was trying to get away, and the evidence could be swallowed, could be disposed of in some other way. And so there's just as much as an exigent circumstance in this case as in Moore.
But you didn't know that he had evidence on him. At that point, there may have been probable cause to search the vehicle based on the odor emanating from it. But this individual wasn't connected with the vehicle, and I'm having a difficult time trying to determine what the probable cause to arrest him was.
Well, the probable cause is that there had been a marijuana offense in the vehicle, and he was connected to the vehicle. The driver had admitted he'd been in the car. All of the defendant's actions corroborated that. Then he was returning to the car. He was the only one carrying the purchases away from the store. It was obviously this group was together. And then you've got the open possession of marijuana. Obviously, they'd been smoking it. Someone had been smoking it in the vehicle. And I cite a line of cases that talk about how the passenger is often engaged in common enterprise with the driver. Wyoming versus Houghton, Maryland versus Pringle. In County Court versus Allen, the U.S. Supreme Court recognized that the state can have a permissive inference that all the occupants are responsible for a gun. And in that case, it was backseat passengers who were complaining about the inference when the guns were on the floorboard of the front seat. And the U.S. Supreme Court said that's a reasonable inference. The officers drew an inference that courts have recognized as reasonable. And in fact, in State versus Brown, in this court, in 63 Ohio State 3rd, which is a 1992 case, this court discussed the facts of New York versus Belton, which is remarkably similar to the case here, where the officer saw drug paraphernalia, a super gold envelope, and then he found marijuana in the car. And in Brown, this court said that the officer could arrest all of the occupants based on probable cause and search
the vehicle. Mr. Taylor, in this case, we're talking about solely a blunt on the console, which is a minor misdemeanor for which there's no right to arrest. There's no basis for arrest here. In those circumstances, the circumstances of this case, how does that produce either exigent circumstances or does it produce an arrest so that a search may be incident there too?
Well, your question raises 2 points, Your Honor. First of all, as far as the exigent circumstances, this court has already said in State versus Moore that there's exigent circumstances when marijuana is involved. The police do not simply have to shrug their shoulders when marijuana is involved, even though it's usually a minor offense. They're allowed to search for the marijuana, as an 8th District case called Perriman mentions. They're not just required to shrug their shoulders. So as far as exigent circumstances go, the police can be concerned about the destruction or disposal of marijuana just as much as they can be about other drugs. Now, as far as the search incident to arrest issue, obviously there's a statute that says you don't arrest for minor misdemeanors. And we have this line of cases out of this court, you know, State versus Jones, State versus Brown, that says we're going to say that the Ohio Constitution prevents an arrest for a minor misdemeanor unless the exceptions in the statute apply. I think those cases are in grave doubt now in light of Virginia versus Moore, which is a U.S. Supreme Court case, and State versus Jones in 2009, which is a case out of this court. In Virginia versus Moore, the court said that a state statute governing when someone can be arrested for a minor offense does not affect the validity of the arrest for constitutional purposes.
But, counsel, there was no arrest here before he delved into his pockets.
Well, yes, but the
so searches incident to arrest are meaningless to this analysis.
No, Your Honor, because as I said earlier in response to another question, under Rawlings versus Kentucky and under Peters versus New York, the police are allowed to date the arrest as soon as they have probable cause. The police do not have to have the subjective intention, I am arresting you, in order for courts and prosecutors to claim later that it was an arrest and that the search was incident to arrest. It's clear in Rawlings versus Kentucky and in Peters versus New York. So even though the police officer did not subjectively think, I'm arresting you.
He didn't have any reason to arrest him after he patted him down.
He patted him down for weapons. He was not, the pat down was to make sure he would not get cut by a knife or other sharp instrument.
I understand that. And absent finding, there was no finding of a weapon. The officer was not in danger. There's no testimony to that effect, correct?
Correct.
And there's no testimony that during that pat down, I also happened to feel a suspicious item in his pockets. There's no testimony as to that.
Correct, and that's not what we're claiming.
And at some point, did the driver not say that the marijuana belonged to him?
No. What the record shows is that the driver said he apologized for, quote, having it. And I don't think that's a complete admission that it's mine. It's his car. He admitted it was his car. But I don't think that excludes probable cause as to the other occupants.
So the Court of Appeals was incorrect on that statement that the driver admitted the marijuana was his?
That statement was incorrect in the lead opinion, yes.
Mr. Taylor, before you sit down, you started your argument by suggesting there were four reasons that you thought we should consider your position. The first was there was no probable cause or exigent circumstances. The second, you indicated, was that the search was incident to an arrest, but you never suggested to us the third or the fourth positions. Could you just quickly say those and before you sit down?
Yes, it's my first and second propositions of law, and I intended to spend most of my time on those issues, but
we have a way of taking your time, sir.
First proposition of law, if you find a Fourth Amendment violation under Herring versus United States, you only suppress evidence as a result of the Fourth Amendment violation if the violation was a result of a deliberate, reckless, or grossly negligent disregard of Fourth Amendment rights, or was a result of systemic or recurring negligence. And under Herring, I don't see how this case comes anywhere close to that standard for suppression. If this court were to conclude that probable cause was lacking, it's our assertion that it is still a very close case on that issue, and the police were not acting in complete disregard or acting negligently in regard to the Fourth Amendment rights of the defendant. I think there's two valid grounds that support the admission of this evidence that support the search. But even if this court finds that they don't quite measure up to probable cause, it's still close enough. Now, the second issue, the second exclusionary rule issue, is something I think is very important, and it relates to this minor misdemeanor case law out of this court, where in Brown in 2003, the court said, we're going to rely on the Ohio Constitution to let the defendant get suppression in that case. This court 74 years ago in State versus Lindway said there's no exclusionary rule under Article 1, Section 14 of the Ohio Constitution. And that case has never been overruled and never been addressed by this court. Subsequent cases have alluded to an exclusionary rule under that provision, but none have been squarely faced with that issue.
And, Mr. Taylor, you're suggesting that Lindway is still good law?
Yes, I am. It has never been overruled, and it should be upheld by this court today, and I think for the several reasons stated in my brief. Obviously, in this particular case, the result would be to let the guilty go free, and that's a result that offends basic notions of the criminal justice system. The text of Section 14 itself does not provide for an exclusionary rule. When Section 14 was adopted in 1851, the prevailing common law rule was that evidence does not get suppressed because it was illegally obtained. So there's no textual or historical basis to conclude that the framers of Section 14
and those
intended
were
to have an exclusionary
points
rule.
That you wanted to present.
Excuse me?
Those were your third and fourth points that you wanted to present.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
And I can see I've got like 30 seconds left, and I'll reserve the balance of my time. Thank you.
Mr. Adair.
Mr. Chief Justice, if it please the court, I think the key fact in this case is that the officers approached this car, they detected the odor of marijuana, they waited briefly for someone to walk up to the car. Two men approached the front doors of the car. The first officer engaged the apparent driver in conversation, and he quickly said, "Yes, it's my marijuana. I'll get rid of it. I apologize." This all took place before my client began to walk away from a rear door, apparently, as he approached it. That was conveyed, "Hey, he's with them. Stop him." The officer who conducted the search, the second officer — there are apparently other officers involved here, but we only heard from two — the second officer who actually detained my client immediately patted him down for weapons and then proceeded to search him. His intention at the time he stopped him was to immediately search him for who knows what. These officers obviously were not involved or primarily interested in enforcing marijuana laws. The driver wasn't arrested. The passenger wasn't arrested. My client was not charged with possession of marijuana. No one was charged with any marijuana offense. Obviously, they were hoping to bootstrap some sort of illegal activity into, say, a search, which might reveal other contraband, as it did with my client, reveal outstanding warrants, possibly lead to an impoundment of a car or some other more serious criminal activity prosecution. The primary interest was not marijuana.
Well, then, you're not saying that this was a pretextual stop or engagement?
Sure, it was. It was.
You're saying it was?
Yeah, it was, but Wren versus United States says that's okay. We don't care about what the subjective intention of the officers was, and obviously,
as long as there's a on its face a reason for the officers to have been engaged with these individuals. Let's move on to one of the points that is made by appellant here, and that's his Fourth Amendment analysis, that the violation has to be by the police officers. Even, say, for argument's sake, they were not permitted to do what they did, and it was a violation or disregard of the Fourth Amendment. But the rationale, the subsequent treatment of this, given the fact that there is no — it's not pervasive or any of the other factors that enter into it. How would you address that?
Well, I think this is exactly the sort of thing the Fourth Amendment is meant to redress. The reference is to Herring versus United States, mm-hmm. which is an extension of Edwards versus Arizona, Arizona versus Edwards, clerical error, warrant appearing in a computer database. Who was at fault? In the older case, it was a police-maintained database. In this one, it was apparently a civilian-maintained database. Good faith somehow saved the search. But and the Supreme Court intends to sort of limit the exclusionary rule in those circumstances where it's sort of an honest mistake in maintaining a database. This is more than that. This is the sort of pretense search that really the exclusionary rule should deter. I suppose the anecdote I would have is why we both need a exclusionary rule and why this sort of conduct needs to be deterred is, about a week ago, I was driving across Kansas, and there is a sign next to the road, like a yellow and black sign saying, "Warning, drug checkpoint ahead, drug detection dog in use." The Supreme Court said you can't do that a couple years ago. What the obvious ploy was, there was a cruiser waiting in the median, probably watching for people to start throwing stuff out of their cars as they came over the hill. Well, don't you need a exclusionary
Did you get any
rule?
Clients out of that experience, Mr. Adair?
I'm not licensed to practice in Kansas.
It's always pro hoc vice, you know.
It was near Fort Riley, too, which I thought was an odd place to set this up. But I thought, just wait a minute, this isn't permitted. This is the situation here is sort of a variation on that. You're trying to take some kind of minor activity like cracked taillights, burned out, whatever, and use it as a way of detecting evidence of some greater crime. So this is the sort of circumstance where I think an exclusionary rule is meaningful.
Counsel, I'm kind of interested in the totality of the circumstances here. You take any one of the items and it looks pretextual or looks like it might be a violation. But as I read the record here, this was a place in an area known for drug traffic. It was 1 a.m. at night. There was a car that had a marijuana cigarette or part of it in it. There was an odor of marijuana coming from the car. Three individuals come out of the establishment and go to get in the car. Two of them get in. One apparently starts to get in, and then when the police are observed, starts to walk away. And I don't know whether it was to walk away into the darkness or what. And there was some mention about sort of padding the pockets. Doesn't that appear to be rather suspicious to you? Or to a reasonable police officer? Wouldn't that appear to be suspicious that there is a probable cause to believe that there is a drug activity going on and with this individual who is, you know, silently apparently trying to make a getaway?
I don't think that there was enough here to establish probable cause to either immediately search my client for marijuana in his pockets or immediately to arrest or charge him with possession of marijuana. That didn't exist. The key fact, as I mentioned before, is that before he was even stopped, the driver said, "I apologize, I'll throw it away." Mm-hmm. So whatever those other circumstances might add up to in the court's mind, probable cause had already been dispelled by this statement of the driver. Now, as far as walking away from the car, he began to approach the door, he began to walk off. As far as patting the pocket, someone who's just come out of a store might be wondering if he still has his money, got his change. If he's walking away from the car, he might be worried he left something in the car, like his glasses. Maybe people don't wear glasses. Some kind of property in the car and be patting to see if that was there. It may just be a reflexive thing.
Marijuana cigarette, something like
well,
that.
Well, anyway, in the car.
Counsel, would you address the argument that the exclusionary rule has never been adopted by Ohio?
It's been applied to redress violations of the state constitution repeatedly in Robinette and Brown, and my brief cites a number of other cases outside of the Fourth Amendment area.
But that's by that you're saying then by implication we have?
By implication, it's Lindway's been overruled. It's not been followed that I'm aware of since MAP was decided in 1961. I don't believe it's been expressly overruled, and maybe this is the time to do that, but obviously the court has applied the exclusionary rule to redress violations of both the state and the federal constitution. It did so in Brown most recently, which is a case that had been back and forth between the issue had been back and forth twice before the U.S. Supreme Court, twice before this court. The final decision was premised on the state constitution, and the exclusionary rule was applied.
What is your position with respect to the search incident to an arrest and the state's position that there doesn't need to be an arrest for the minor misdemeanor? The search can proceed, and it's a line of cases, Rawlings and Peter's case. And what's your response to that line?
There was no testimony that the defendant was being arrested for possession of marijuana. There's no testimony that that was the intention. It's a fiction that's been superimposed by the state trying to save this search. But there was no arrest. There was no real interest in pursuing a marijuana charge. I think they were simply interested in finding evidence of a greater crime, which here was minute quantities or very small quantities of drugs.
You have no problem with the officers detaining the individuals at this point based on what they observe when they approach the vehicle and what the odors became aware of. So that conduct.
I probably would not really contest that issue, but of course what we have here was
reasonable suspicion to conduct a Terry stop, right?
Except that wasn't really part of the landscape of how the case went through the court. I probably would not seriously contest that there was a basis for a Terry stop. But it was, in fact, more than that. It was a full custodial search.
Okay. Where is it that you perceive that the officers diverted from proper police procedure?
When the driver said, "I apologize, it's mine, I'll get rid of it." That's the key fact.
Is that conclusive that somebody says this is mine?
I mean, it certainly means that at that point there wasn't probable cause or even reasonable suspicion to stop.
Don't you agree that the officer could have detained the individual who was moving away from the vehicle?
If he had reasonable suspicion, he was involved in criminal activity, but in fact that had already been dispelled by the driver saying it's mine.
But if the three had been together, wouldn't it be reasonable for him to conduct a Terry stop of that suspect?
Again, this wasn't a part of the landscape of argument in the trial court, but I would say it wasn't reasonable at that point because the blunt was in the front seat. The defendant was approaching a rear door. There was no claim that there was an odor of marijuana about his person.
And the
driver had already made his statement.
Was the pat-down appropriate that was conducted of Mr. Johnson?
Assuming that there was a basis for a Terry stop, certainly the pat-down.
You're not conceding that, but assuming.
No, I don't know if I concede that or not, because in addition to having a justification for the Terry stop, you then have to have further justification to frisk him for weapons. Now, whether you can draw that from the reputation of the area.
Upon finding no weapons, yeah. What is the appropriate course of action for the officer at that point, in your view?
Once he finds no weapons?
Yes.
That's the end of it. He can't conduct a further search.
And so the only egregious conduct that you find in this case was when the officer actually put his hands into the pockets of the defendant, Mr. Johnson, mm-hmm. and retrieved the drugs in this case.
And again, if you read Officer Sanderson's description of what he did, I knew he was going to be searched. When I stopped him, I knew he was going to be searched. I frisked him down first, and I immediately went into his pockets. So it was one continuous thing. His reason for the frisk was to find out whether there was any knife or weapon that might pose an immediate peril to him before he went into the pockets. So, I mean, he was doing that for his safety, but it was his safety in conducting a full custodial search.
Did they go into the pockets of any other of the gentlemen?
Mr. Taylor is correct. The record from the suppression hearing doesn't give much detail. At the plea hearing, I think it said that, in fact, the vehicle was searched. I believe the vehicle was searched and the driver was searched. I think the driver actually had some marijuana in his possession. It's clear from the suppression hearing record that no one else was charged with anything. In fact, they were allowed to drive off from the scene after the marijuana was confiscated.
But your point, what I'm hearing is that once the driver admitted that the marijuana blunt was his and that he offered to get rid of it, that should have ended it. Encounter.
That had any justification for any further contact with my client.
It would have been different, counsel, if your client had had the odor of marijuana on him, for example.
Wouldn't have helped. And if the driver had said, I apologize, it belongs to him, I think my client would have been in trouble, too. Mm-hmm. But there was no testimony one way or the other when any of these individuals had an odor of marijuana about them. Mm-hmm. As far as the other issues, I think we've already addressed the Herring versus United States claim that this is an appropriate case. We've talked about the Lindway case, and the final claim was the greater protection under the Ohio Constitution on the issue of arrest for minor misdemeanors. The only thing I would point out is that we do have a statute here solely addressed to minor misdemeanors. Perhaps the distinction with Virginia versus Moore is that the Virginia statute at issue somehow created either a presumption or an exemption from arrest for serious offenses, because whatever the defendant was charged with in that case, a license violation, carried up to a year. Here we have a statute that only focuses on minor misdemeanors, which by definition are offenses that carry no jail time.
So if we were to write on this, what would be the rule of law that, I mean, I'm presuming that you would like to see us improvidently allow this case.
Yes, I would.
say we didn't. Now, keep in mind, I didn't vote to take this in. But say we didn't.
I didn't either, Justice O'Connor.
I noticed that. Say we were going to write something. What is there to write here?
The Court of Appeals, in two opinions, provided a nice 1, 2, 3, 4 type analysis on why this search violated the Fourth Amendment. It was correctly decided by the Court of Appeals. If it's correctly decided by the Court of Appeals under the Fourth Amendment, there's no real reason to get into all this other stuff because there is an exclusionary rule for violation of the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, notwithstanding whether there is or should be one for the comparable violation of the Ohio Constitution. Thank you. We would ask that the judgment of the 10th District Court of Appeals be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Adair. Mr. Taylor, you wanted 30 seconds?
Thank you, Your Honor. He didn't say it's mine. He said the record says he apologized for having it. I think that's a different statement than saying it's mine.
Counsel, even if he said it was his, does that end it? I mean, does the law enforcement officer have to take that as conclusive that it is his, that maybe he's not protecting somebody else? Or?
No, and in fact, I think the defendant's own behavior focuses a suspicion on him, not just the driver. So I don't think the officer has to accept the driver's word on that. But finally, as to the rule of law, I think that should come out of this case, and I think they're pretty juicy rules of law, which is exclusionary rule issues. My first proposition of law addresses the federal exclusionary rule. My second proposition of law addresses the fact that there is no exclusionary rule under the state constitutional provision, and so I would ask that the court adopt those as the issues of statewide interest in its syllabus.
But what about the argument that we have implicitly overruled that line of case or that case and have excluded evidence regularly?
There's a couple.
What's your response to the fact that we're not following that case and we do exclude evidence and we've done it on a regular basis for decades?
There's language in State versus Payne, which was a case I had up here, on Foster. And this court recognized in Payne that this court does not have implied precedence. And if the court rules a certain way, but it doesn't, if it's not squarely faced with the issue, if the parties aren't raising it, then I don't think it's a firm precedent. And I don't think this court would have left such an important issue of constitutional policy to mere implication. Second of all, on the in the recent case of State versus Lester, this court declined to follow a recent summary reversal in that case. That was, I believe, a Cologne issue, and the reason it did was that the earlier summary reversal was not based on full briefing. No one has been raising Lindway and in these prior cases, and as of 1978. This court said Lindway has not been overruled, and in 1993, the First District recognized the same thing. I think Lindway is still there. This court needs to address it one way or the other.
Although, counsel, at least Alexa's search is showing that it's been questioned 13 times. Lindway has, most recently in Robinette. So there may be some question about its validity, would you not say?
Robinette did cite Lindway, and I don't think it was questioning it. It was recognizing, in fact, that the exclusionary rule issue is separate and apart from the Fourth Amendment search issue. I don't think Robinette was overruling Lindway. In any event, I think this kind of essential issue for the criminal justice system shouldn't be left to implication. This court should address it head on. And so I would just ask that the court adopt the state's first and second propositions of law and adopt the third and fourth as well if it's inclined to do that and reverse the Court of Appeals and reinstate the defendant's conviction.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Court will take a break at this time.